Hello and welcome to Power Play for this Friday, January 14th. I'm Joyce Napier. Today on the show, approaching the Omicron peak.
Given disease activity far exceeds previous peaks, even the downside of this curve could be considerable.
Canada is approaching the peak of the Omicron wave as the healthcare system continues to buckle under the weight of record hospitalizations. Can hospitals hold through to the other side of Omicron? We'll ask Nova Scotia Premier Tim Houston and bring in a panel of doctors working on the pandemic's front lines. Then, trucking troubles. Canada's vaccine mandate for cross-border truckers starts tomorrow. But late Wednesday and for most of yesterday, unvaccinated Canadian truckers were told they would be exempt until the government said they would not. It was a mistake, but an industry group says some truckers have already hit the road should they get a special exemption. And just how significant and costly could a loss of unvaccinated cross-border drivers be? We'll ask an industry leader. Plus, water woes. Back in the fall, Iqaluit residents went 2 months without safe tap water. Now, they are once again being told to flush their taps after fuel was detected in city water. What will it take to stop contaminants from entering the city supply? We'll ask the mayor. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. Yesterday, Quebec reported the province's Omicron wave had peaked. And today, British Columbia says they have also likely peaked, but last weekend. But that doesn't mean the crushing wave has let up on Canada's hospitals. That's one of the takeaways from the latest federal pandemic modeling. Take a look at this graph. The far right of the graph shows Omicron has overtaken all other waves of COVID-19. Canada's top doctor, Theresa Tam, says she hopes cases will peak soon, but warns the other side of that peak will still be a challenge.
We could be like others, seeing a sharp, sharp increase and then it coming down fairly fast. But I think we're all just wanting to be a bit cautious about pronouncing on that until we've seen more information.
So where do the numbers stand today? Hospital admissions across the country have quadrupled over the last month. There is an average of 6,779 people being admitted to hospital each day. And what about ICU admissions? They doubled last month, with the daily average at 884 admissions. That's the hospitalization situation nationwide, but how is the Omicron wave playing out in the provinces? Nova Scotia is seeing a dramatic increase in COVID-19 hospital admissions. Today, the province is reporting there are 57 people in hospital due to COVID-19, with 10 people in ICU. Nova Scotia has also reported outbreaks at three Cape Breton hospitals and that 105 people have contracted COVID after being admitted to the hospital. In light of all that, this week, Nova Scotia Health postponed all surgeries except urgent and time-sensitive cancer surgeries in an effort to reassign staff. But will that be enough? Will the province bring in tougher measures to curb hospitalizations? Let's find out. And joining me now is Nova Scotia Premier Tim Houston. Hello, Premier. Always nice to have you on the show. I hope you and your family are doing well. I want to ask you something about today's federal modeling, you know, from Canada's Public Health Agency. It shows that hospitalizations are on the dramatic rise across the country. And this week, Nova Scotia Health postponed all surgeries except urgent and time-sensitive cancer surgeries. You know, what else is your, you know, government doing to shore up hospital capacity?
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be back for sure. And definitely the variant is having a dramatic impact on the lives of people in Nova Scotia, across the country and around the world. And our healthcare system is no different. So we're taking steps to protect our healthcare system, to support our healthcare system. That means really focusing on, again, boosters in the arms with big sense of urgency to get the boosters out there. to get people vaccinated that maybe haven't taken that step yet, whether it's their first or second. So we're really encouraging that. But look, our hospital system, we have about right now in this province, about 60 people in the hospital as a direct result of their COVID. They couldn't manage their COVID anymore at home. They're in the hospital. And another 150 or 160 people that are in the hospital, maybe for something else, but with COVID. So 200 plus Nova Scotians in the hospital system, every one of those requiring special care resources of the healthcare system. So it's a pressure for sure. And at the time, our healthcare professionals are dealing with that and the ordinary pressures. And they're doing it all short staffed because some of their colleagues are off. So we definitely know the pressure on our healthcare system. So we're doing what we can to support them. But I'll tell you, our healthcare professionals have really, really stepped up over the last couple of years and certainly over the last month. So we can never thank them enough. But the pressure is there. We need to make sure the healthcare system is there for those when they need it in case of an emergency. It could be anyone at any point in time. So, but certainly the pressure is on the healthcare system.
You know, I'm always curious of the people that are in hospital, how many are fully vaccinated? Because I think that is really the statistic that people are now following. I mean, 85% of people are vaccinated in Ontario, in Quebec as well. But, you know, yesterday it was reported that there were 3 new outbreaks at hospitals in your province. When asked if you would allow, for instance, for unvaccinated health workers to go back to work, you said no. So, you know, what is being done to bolster that workforce? You were saying so many of them, like across the country, it's not unique to your province, are calling in sick.
Yeah, to support those that are there for sure. So that's why, you know, postponing some surgeries, postponing some procedures to kind of redeploy resources within the healthcare system. But to answer your question, certainly a disproportionate number of people using the hospital system are unvaccinated. In this province, Nova Scotia, we're around 91% of people are vaccinated, or, you know, one dose, but or second dose, and some of them even their booster. So a high percentage. We want to keep moving that up. But the percentage of people using the hospital system, having to rely on the hospital system as a result of COVID, is like 25%. So it's much more higher than the population that's unvaccinated. So that tells us that, for me, that's confirmation the vaccines work, the vaccines are effective, and there will be breakthrough cases, yes, of course. But what we're talking about is the vaccines help reduce the severity of the impact of the virus on a person. So that's why we want people to get vaccinated. But look, no, we're not. There's no discussion about bringing back unvaccinated workers into the workforce. That's not something we're talking about. But redeploying, postponing, you know, moving things around as we can. Of course, that's a constant management exercise to support those that are on.
You know, all premiers, shift. You know, all premiers such as yourself are trying to, you know, find creative ways to get those unvaccinated. Mm-hmm. Quebec has that so-called anti-vax tax. That's a real no-no for you, or is that something that you would keep in your back pocket?
Look, what we've taken a lot of steps in this province. We have, you know, you have to be vaccinated. A lot of people are off work in different professions because they're not vaccinated. You have to be vaccinated to go to, you know, certain events, certain public settings. So we've taken a lot of steps. So we'll continue to push people, push the education, try to educate people. If they have questions, reach out. The vaccines are safe. The vaccines are effective. We're seeing that for sure. So we'll continue to work, but we have done a lot already to encourage people and to move them towards getting vaccinated, and we'll continue to do that.
So quickly, Premier, can you give us an update, you know, on the federal government's deployment of the Red Cross in Nova Scotia?
Yeah, well, so we feel the urgency to get the boosters in arms and continue the vaccination program. So we're really thankful that the federal government has been there when we've reached out so many times. They're making the doses available. The doses are available. So then it becomes a human resource issue. Do you have enough professionals to get them? So we've reached out, and they're going to help us with Red Cross professionals. They're going to come to the province, I think, before the January 24th, sometime between now and then. A couple dozen will come here and set up a clinic and help us get boosters in arms. So we're thankful for that, but we feel the urgency to make appointments available to people, and we are doing that, hundreds of thousands of additional appointments in the month of January, and people are stepping up and getting those. So we're appreciative of that.
And before I let you go, let's talk a little bit about good news, because I think people are desperate to hear something good is happening out there aside from Omicron. So I want to get to your childcare deal with the federal government. Your province's plan to implement the $10 a day childcare deal with the feds is reportedly ahead of schedule. So how soon can Nova Scotia parents see a drop in prices and, more importantly, more spots?
Yeah, so we're really, really pleased about the agreement in general. Really, really pleased in the progress. So to how soon can they see a drop in fees? They already got it, but they didn't know. They just learned today that fees were decreased by 25% effective January 1st. So they've already been benefiting from the agreement with the federal government. So that was announced today. So we're really pleased with that. And Minister Gould's team, and right from the Prime Minister's office, I mean, very helpful on that. So Nova Scotians are already benefiting from the agreement with the 25% reduction. In April, they'll either be able to get a check for the period, you know, January to the end of March, or take a credit going forward. So the first family I talked to said, I'll take the check, please. But we know that Nova Scotians will have that choice. And we're also working to create more spaces. There'll be 1,500 new spaces created this fall on the way, all on the way to $10 a day, all on the way in this province to 9,500 more spots, more accessible quality childcare. It's historic, really, what's happening. We'll have a positive impact for generations. So really excited to do it ahead of schedule. That was scheduled to be a 50% reduction by the end of this calendar year. So we get 25 of that now, and 25 of that will still come. But really, really excited about that. It is good news in a world where
that's right.
Good news never hurts.
I knew we would be able to finish on a sort of happier note. Nova Scotia Premier Tim Houston, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great weekend.
And now to a major vaccine mandate miscommunication. Canada's trucking industry was turned upside down this week after an error by the Government of Canada and Canada Border Services Agency, rather, caused confusion over the vaccine mandate for truckers. So up until now, unvaccinated cross-border truckers have been exempted from Canada's testing and quarantine requirements. But that changes tomorrow when the government's vaccine mandate comes into effect for them. The industry has been preparing for the change and raising concerns about the potential for supply chain shortages if too many drivers are sidelined by the new rule. But the industry thought it was getting a reprieve when an exemption was reported by the Canada Border Services Agency late Wednesday night. But then yesterday evening, the federal government finally set the record straight, did an about-face, and announced the mandate would actually stand. So starting tomorrow, Canadian cross-border truckers will have to be vaccinated or face mandatory quarantines upon their return to Canada. But some industry leaders are calling for the feds to give a temporary exemption to unvaccinated drivers who were already dispatched yesterday during that window of confusion. So how many drivers are on the road, and will the government grant an exemption? Let's bring in one of those industry leaders, Mike Million, president of the Private Motor Truck Council of Canada. He is calling for a temporary exemption. Welcome, Mr. Million. Welcome to Power Play. Good to have you on the show. What did you make of yesterday's sort of fiasco surrounding, the communication of the vaccine mandate for cross-border truckers? And how many of them have already hit the road and are now in that gray zone?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on your show today. What did I make of the, I think the fiasco is a good way to put it. Frustrating, confusing, left a lot of people with their heads spinning. We had a meeting with government officials Wednesday afternoon where they were explaining what was going to happen at the border effective midnight tonight. We provided all that information to our members in the industry, and then at 10 o'clock at night, the news was leaked out that apparently Canadian drivers returning that were unvaccinated weren't going to have to quarantine. And then, as you know, 16 hours later, they changed their mind about changing their mind. and said the message come out an error. So, and normally they reach out to us. And the disturbing part was these two communications happened, and there was no outreach to industry on this. We found it the same way that that everybody else did. So it was very concerning. It led to a lot of confusion, a lot of frustration. And one of the things that has really happened out of this because of this error message is during that 16-hour window when government put out the statement and said returning Canadians won't have to quarantine, some drivers were dispatched. We have a supply chain shortage. We have a driver shortage. There was loads that needed to be covered. Unvaccinated drivers have been delivering loads since March of 2020 because as essential workers, they've always been able to go. So when this announcement came out, some of them were dispatched, and 16 hours later, the government does an about-face, and now we have drivers out on the road that when they return are going to have to quarantine, and they also have to get a PCR test within 72 hours of arriving at the border, and they didn't know about this till late yesterday afternoon. So it's been very confusing, very troublesome, and very frustrating.
Okay, so how many truckers, Mr. Million, are we talking about? And, you know, so how many days will they have to quarantine? Do you even know that?
We do know that. We had a meeting with the government at 1 o'clock this afternoon where they went over a lot of the protocols that were going to have to be followed. First of all, how many unvaccinated truckers were dispatched out yesterday? I honestly can't answer that. We received emails and calls from four or five of our members who said they dispatched a driver out. But to give you a concrete number, I can't tell you. But no matter how many are out there, what's going to happen is when they arrive at the border, they have to quarantine for 14 days because if they arrive after midnight tonight, because there's no longer an exemption for an essential worker. So the issue is going to be when they left, they didn't know they had to do this. And if they knew they were going to have to do that, they wouldn't have left. Now they're going to lose 2 weeks' paycheck. Plus they have to find a PCR test.
And, and so what has the government, have you, like, since this sort of snafu happened with the communication, have you had communication with the government? What are they telling you about sort of these truckers that fell in the cracks, so to speak?
Basically too bad. It is what it is. It's kind of frustrating. We had a meeting this afternoon. We've asked for these drivers to be exempted that were sent out in that 16-hour window, and we were told it can't happen. The public health order doesn't allow for an exemption. When these drivers return, they are going to have to quarantine. They're supposed to use the ArriveCan app. They're supposed to have a PCR test. Now, they've asked officers to use discretion when it comes to finding them when they return if they don't have a PCR test or haven't used the ArriveCan app. But they don't have discretion when it comes to the quarantine order. And they can't quarantine in their trucks. So.
Oh, they can't quarantine in their trucks. So that's quite a situation. So let me ask you about the cargo. So while they're stuck in a quarantine, what happens to the cargo they're carrying? Does it get delivered?
Yes, so we did get some clarification on that. They put a partial exemption in place where when the driver arrives at the border, they're going to be given detailed instructions. They will be allowed to continue on to deliver the load that they've brought into Canada following strict public health measures. And once that load is delivered, then they immediately are going to have to transport to their place of quarantine. If that place of quarantine is their home and they delivered in Alberta and they live in Ontario, they will be allowed to drive legally within the hours of service regulations, empty from their last delivery point in Alberta to their home, and then finish their quarantine period there.
Well, that's quite a situation, situation right now. And what that will do to the supply chain is a conversation probably we'll be having in a couple of weeks. Mike Million, president of the Private Motor Truck Council of Canada, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks for having me on.
And coming up, federal modeling shows COVID-19 hospitalizations surging. How long can hospitals handle Omicron's relentless force? We bring in the doctors next. Stay with PowerPlay.
given disease activity far exceeds previous peaks, even the downside of this curve could be considerable. With several weeks of very intense activity expected to come, we need to do our best now to limit the size of the Omicron surge in order to maintain the health system and critical functions of society.
And welcome back. The Omicron wave keeps crashing down. That's from the latest federal COVID-19 modeling. Canada's top doctor says Omicron has eclipsed all previous waves in Canada, with the latest forecasting suggesting a large surge of hospitalization is on the way. How close is Canada to hitting its peak? Quebec and British Columbia think they've already hit it. Meanwhile, Manitoba changed its COVID-19 approach, seeming to accept that most people will catch the virus and moving away from trying to stop the spread. How dire is the risk to hospitals, and how can Canadians protect themselves as the country's testing and tracing systems have crumbled under the weight of the wave? Let's ask two doctors. Dr. Quadro Koromantang is an ICU and palliative care doctor here in Ottawa. And we have Dr. Lisa Barrett, an infectious disease specialist in Halifax. Nice to see you both. Welcome, doctors, to PowerPlay. And thank you. Thank you for the work you do. Dr. Koromantang, let me start with you. Omicron's peak looks like a moving target across the country. It seems to be different everywhere. Quebec says it's at its peak. Other provinces say the peak is coming soon. BC said the peak was last week. Where does Ontario stand? And do we even know?
Yeah, it's so tricky, Joyce. Like, you know, in terms of the community peak, It's tricky because we don't have the capacity to test like we did in previous waves. So to really get a sense of how much it's spreading within the community, at this point, it's guesstimate. You know, like we know that, just whatever case numbers we're getting, you'd probably multiply that by at least five to get a sense of what's in the community. And so hospitalizations, you know, in Ontario, I think are still on the rise, but, locally here, we've noticed a slightly the rate is slowing down, which we're, crossing our fingers that this will continue. But man, yeah, it's challenging to really predict the timeline. What we could do is look at other jurisdictions to get a sense of how quick the descent could be. So when we look at South Africa, when we look at Denmark, when we look at the United Kingdom, we could get some estimates on the duration of this wave, but a lot of questions still out there.
Dr. Barrett, what is your take? I mean, is Ontario, is the peak reached here? Do we actually know when we're told that we have hit a peak? Is that actually possible? Is it even possible to tell and to know that?
Yeah, well, we have guesstimates, and one of the things that we need to switch from is daily interpretation to weekly interpretation. So we need to recognize that there is a difference.
Oh, I think we just lost Dr. Barrett. This is so. Let me go to you, Dr. Koromantang, and ask you this. You know, what happens? You know, sort of. What does it mean when we make it to the other side of the peak? Manitoba, for instance, is changing its COVID-19 strategy. Premier Heather Stephenson said instead of trying to contain the surge, the government will try to manage risk in the community. She said we have to live with it. Does that sound like, science to you?
Yeah, I mean, this is where we ideally want to head towards, right? Like when we transition from being in a pandemic for the virus to be endemic, similar to the influenza. And so, when that period happens, it's tough to delineate. But what we're ultimately trying to do is protect our hospitals to make sure that we can maintain normal capacity, we could get your surgeries, do your cancer screening, all the important things that are part of healthcare. And so, as we could become a more and more vaccinated nation, as we get more and more exposure to Omicron, we're ideally moving towards that aspect of, having to live with it. And so ultimately what Manitoba is doing is where we need to go. The question is, are they ready? Or would they be able to manage the surge in cases and within their hospitals? And, you know, time will tell. But ultimately, this is the direction that we ultimately need to go. Because, Joyce, sorry, I'm rambling a bit, but our current strategies, like what we're seeing in Ontario, where we've closed schools, where we've stopped, shut down businesses, restaurants, this isn't sustainable. So we need to have an approach, ultimately, that we can move forward as future variants come through, you know, because we can't keep doing the same thing, like, forevermore.
You know, I think a lot of people listening to us, Dr. Caraventang, will probably share your thought. We can't keep shutting down and stopping our lives on and on. And, you know, maybe Premier Stephenson is right. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. I see that Dr. Barrett is back, but that's all the time we have. So, Dr. Caraventang and Dr. Barrett, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. And again, thank you for the work you do. It is very, very important. And this nation is quite grateful to you.
Thanks for having us, Joyce.
And coming up, the news surrounding Canada's vaccine mandate for truckers has been fast and furious. Conflicting information has been coming fast, leaving truckers furious. Will the snafu set public confidence in government pandemic communications back? Our strategy session digs in next. Stay with us. We will be right back. And welcome back. A mad scramble to set the record straight. For nearly a day this week, the trucking industry thought the government was scrapping its vaccine mandate for Canadian truckers before the government announced it had all been a mistake and the mandate will start tomorrow as planned. What took the Fed so long to set things right? Does the government have a communication problem over their pandemic measures? And Quebec Premier François Legault made waves this week with a pitch for a first-in-Canada tax, a tax on the unvaccinated. Will the idea pass public opinion and could other provinces follow? Let's get our Friday panel of strategists to weigh in. Greg McCachran from Proof Strategy leans liberal. Kate Harrison from Summa Strategies leans conservative. And Anne McGrath is the NDP's national director. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday.
Hi.
So nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Greg, let me start with you. You know, the government's community has definitely this week had a communication problem. You know, now we should note that you do lobbying work with Home Depot, which is impacted by supply chain issues. This, you know, relative to the truckers, the mandate, the vaccine mandate for truckers. But I don't want to ask you about supply chain. I want to ask about just the communication problem. We had someone from the industry earlier, Mr. Million, in the show, who said the communication was a bit of a disaster. Is the federal government, does the federal government have a communication problem? What happened there?
You know, we were monitoring this as, you know, in terms of my day job. I'm not, you know, directly working on that. But it seemed very odd when the first statement came out. And late in the day, I can tell you there was a big scramble as the information got passed around, you know, the retail industry, other industries. So it's hugely problematic. It's not the first time that we've seen this with the federal government or provincial governments. You know, we had the issue in Ontario about when kids were going back to school, when they were, when they weren't. And so I think we do have to give some understanding because we're working during a pandemic. But this was pretty bad. And we also can't treat a government like a monolith. There are political offices, there's the bureaucracy, there's crown corporations, there's agencies, there's different people responsible for repeating or transmitting different messages. But the important thing is the message that you transmit has to be accurate, especially in a case like this. In the interview you mentioned previous on the show here, Joyce, you know, we have some truckers that were dispatched and now they were dispatched under one understanding and now we're going to have to live through a quarantine under another. That being said, I wish everyone would get vaccinated, so this would be less and less of a problem. But I'm sure that somebody who was responsible for that message had a very, very bad day.
Yeah, and I mean, Kate, so now they're coming to the border. They don't know if they have their Arrive Can app set up. They don't know if they can get a PCR test. There's a lot of confusion, and they will be at the mercy of whichever agent is at the border. Will they get a break? Will they not get a break? That's the thing, right? It depends on the agent that, right? You can tell him, look, I thought that I was exempt. I'm not exempt. What if the agent, they could have a fine? So what do you make of this miscommunication?
Yeah, things in politics are rarely a matter of coincidence. So if it looks like a flip-flop, I suspect that somewhere along the way, there probably was. And I take Graves' point that, you know, it's easy to be an armchair quarterback on comms decisions when government is a big beast and things are fluid and decisions change. But this particular policy has been well communicated for some time. Everybody knew this deadline was coming. And really, up until this week, it seemed very clear what the policy direction of the government would be. So particularly for an industry and a sector that relies so much on predictability and consistency in order to keep steady and smooth operations, the government really felt short here in terms of making that happen. So hard to know exactly what went on behind the scenes. I suspect that maybe the government is a little bit concerned that some of the supply chain challenges that we're feeling now would be exacerbated by this. But the fact remains that from a comms perspective, this could have been handled much better by picking a lane, sorry to use the trucking and transportation pun, and sticking to it and clarifying any miscommunication earlier than what they did.
It was a good pun, though. But Anne, you know, so you know, there are going to be supply chain problems. They already exist now. The trucking industry has raised the concern. They say the probably 16,000 cross-border truckers are not vaccinated. We'll take them off the road, leading to greater supply challenges for Canada. Could this vaccine mandate backfire and end up with shortages and higher prices for consumers?
Well, certainly in other instances, we've seen that issues like this don't create, what they create is more vaccines. So my hope is that those truckers who are not vaccinated will become vaccinated. I would say that this is at best a communications mess up that created other problems. And at worst, it's a policy flip-flop. So I don't rule that out as a possibility. You know, I agree with vaccine mandates in targeted areas and areas where it really matters, like healthcare. I think in some parts of education for sure, and absolutely for truckers crossing the border, it makes absolute sense that they should be vaccinated. And perhaps it hasn't been a strong urge for that to happen so far, but maybe something like this will actually create the urgency that. The urgency of vaccination for many of those folks.
I want to pivot now to Quebec and talking about getting tough on the unvaccinated. Greg McCracken, Quebec has sent, you know, shockwaves across Canada over its plan to tax the unvaccinated. Is this a smart move or a trial balloon or just a premier showing his teeth?
That's a good question. It's a lot of conversation in Ottawa this week about what Premier Legault was up to. Was it a distraction because the chief medical officer had resigned? Was it a trial balloon to try to get things moving? We talked last week on the show, Joyce, about how needing a vaccination to go to a cannabis or a liquor store in Quebec certainly increased the amount of vaccinations. And we know that from him saying this the other day. We heard reports yesterday that the number of vaccinated in Quebec every day is rising. So it might be a tool for that. We don't really know. He does have enough political capital that if he had to walk this back, he probably could. What I find interesting is last fall, every political party, federal political party, would have loved the endorsement of Premier Legault. Erin O'Toole and the Conservatives got it. But if you were to look right now at the position of Erin O'Toole, in terms of vaccinations and the Premier of Quebec, they are as far apart as they can be. And Joyce, I hate talking to you about Quebec, someone who's actually from there, and trying to tell you what's going on. But that is a huge thing. And I wonder if they're going to have implications for the Conservative Party there, because they are extremely far apart, the Conservatives and the government and Premier Legault, on vaccinations.
I want to quickly, I really don't have a lot of time left, but I want to go to Anne and to Kate. Kate, the Prime Minister sat on the fence. He didn't want to say whether he was for or against it. He wants more details. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty indelicate way to raise a national public policy conversation and saying, well, it's really something the provinces should be looking at, even though I think it's pretty clear that the feds have a desired direction in terms of where they want to go here. I think that we should be really worried about what is happening in Quebec and the impact that this is going to have on those who are most vulnerable and marginalized, because as much as there is this sense that it's a bunch of hillbilly conservatives that aren't getting the vaccine, we actually know through data that a lot of the people that are still vaccine reluctant and hesitant are not those people. They're marginalized communities, ethnic communities. We should be looking to put a hand out to these people and encourage them to get the shot and not slap their hand with a fine. And I think that we are getting into a really difficult moral and ethical conversation. Quebec seems to be fine to wade into it, but I think other provinces are looking at this rightly with a fair bit of skepticism and being quite leery of it.
And very quickly, because I've got to go, you say that there are ways to get people to get vaccinated. Was this an effective way, because the next day the appointments increased? Yes or no? It was nasty, but was it effective?
Hard to say at the moment. There are so many unanswered questions, but the one thing that it did do was it had the desired effect of taking everybody's focus off the resignation of the medical officer of health. So it was a smart political move in that sense. It's a distraction, definitely, and everybody's talking about details for something that has no details.
Yeah, exactly. And the details will come next month, apparently, says Quebec. So Greg McEachran, Kate Harrison, Anne McGrath, again, thanks for being there. Have yourselves a safe and happy weekend.
Thank you.
Take care.
And stay with us. Another year brings more trouble for Iqaluit's drinking water. Is the city's bracing itself for another do not consume order? Iqaluit Mayor Kenny Bell joins us next, right after these messages. And welcome back. Something is in Iqaluit's drinking water again. Remember last year, 8,000 people went 2 months without being able to drink from the city's tap water after fuel was discovered in the water supply. But this time the city's announcement doesn't have a do not consumer order. So what's wrong with the drinking water? Let's find out. Joining me now is Iqaluit Mayor Kenny Bell. Mayor Bell, welcome to Power Play. Nice to see you again. Unfortunately, we're still having the same conversation as last time we spoke. What is going on?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. You know, it's we noticed by this public months ago that we were still going to have problems, that they could potentially smell some hydrocarbons in their water moving forward until, you know, everything is set in stone. You know, there's been a lot of work that's been done. One of the things that wasn't done, has been started but wasn't completed, was the environmental cleanup of the entire site within inside the building and not. And that's due to our holiday season, where the environmental team that is a contractor left town. So they start again on Monday, and you know, we're still testing well within Canadian standards. So you know, everything is still safe.
So I'm wondering, is there a way to stop this? Can this be stopped, or will the city keep getting fuel in its water supply? I mean, is there an end to this, you think, or is it just a we fix it as it happens?
Yeah, no, you know, I mean, obviously this has been a crazy emergency that just doesn't make any sense. You know, to a layman like myself, you know, just trying to, we go with what the engineers and the experts say. We believe that, you know, the source is gone. We don't have any more entering our system. whatever was there yesterday was around 50 micrograms, which is 25 micrograms less than our alarm to set off on the S-CAN unit that we've installed on our system. So we're just, you know, once the cleanup happens and, you know, there's some membrane that's going to be installed in the tanks, we believe that that will be the end of it. But ultimately, we need a new source of water and we need a new treatment center. And we've known that for about 6 years now. We have that call in for the government. They've been fast tracking it and we're hoping to hear good news from them, you know, really, really soon.
And then we hope, Mayor Bell, that you will share that good news with us. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. That is Mayor Kenny Bell from Iqaluit. Have a good weekend, sir.
You too. Thank you very much for having me.
And coming up, it's only the second week of 2022, but there's already so much to unpack. Who scored some political points this week and who fumbled? The press gallery unveils its plays and misplays next. Stay with us. And welcome back. The federal government put the brakes on a trucker vaccine mandate only to rev the engine again. Trucking associations say this left them scrambling. And speaking of revving engines, Quebec is upping the ante for unvaccinated adults. Premier François Legault says unvaccinated adults will have to pay a significant health care contribution or tax or fine, call it whatever you will. So what are the political wins and losses of the week? Let's ask the press gallery. Susan Delacourt is a columnist with the Toronto Star, a must read. And we have CTVnews.ca online political producer, reporter Rachel Aiello. She also writes the Capital Dispatch newsletter, another must read. So nice to see you both. Happy Friday. Always good to see you. Rachel, you are handing the federal government a misplay this week. What is it and why?
Yeah, the federal vaccine mandate for truckers, you know, Joyce, it's always a sign of a bad day in political comms when the second line in your statement trying to clarify the situation is our position hasn't changed. So what we saw between Wednesday and Thursday this week was a back and forth, you know, set in error, the CBSA, the government came out to clarify that they were going ahead with this, unvaccinated truckers wouldn't be exempt, was really hours, almost a full day of confusion that led to unvaccinated truckers getting on the road, as we heard earlier in the show. And now these truckers are going to be stuck. Now, yes, of course, if they had gotten vaccinated, like millions of Canadians, they wouldn't be in this predicament. But this is also an issue of the government's making. And I just find it particularly interesting that the government has been able to, within the day, tell truckers that they will not get a temporary exemption for these folks who have gone across the border, that they will be facing this, when I'm sure that that quick clarity probably would have been really helpful yesterday.
Susan, quickly, your reaction to this.
Something's very wrong in communications, and I'm not sure, as your strategist panel was saying earlier, I'm not sure which part of government is responsible for this. But this is, we are starting to see these, whether it's an issue of exhaustion, of burnout, but we are seeing communications problems in this government, and this was a serious one. As Rachel is saying, it's had real world impact. And the fact that it took so long to correct it is sort of doubles the problem or
yeah,
heightens
and
it. There's no excuse for it, really.
Exactly. And I think that's what's happening in newsrooms across Ottawa. Everybody's scrambling till midnight trying to figure out which of the two versions was going to be the one that was reality. Susan, you actually have a play this week.
Yes, and you were talking about it earlier. I give points to Premier François Legault for his play of the week on the anti-vax tax. As Anne McGrath wisely, always wisely, observed, it got attention off the fact that he no longer has the same medical officer of health, Dr. Heruda, who's been a fixture of this. And it got us talking about the unvaccinated. And that is an interesting discussion in total typical Quebec fashion, we are talking about the Constitution and our rights within the country. I think it's an interesting discussion. I don't think it's as simple as people say it is, that it's, you know, it is anti-constitutional or anything like that. I think Legault has started a conversation that Canadians want to have, which is, what is the obligation of the unvaccinated to our system? You can't just opt out of this this country and what it's going through altogether.
Yeah. Quickly, I have 30 seconds. Rachel, reaction to that? Good play, good political play on the part of Legault?
Potentially, we'll wait and see. I think the devil's in the details here, and it's going to be really interesting to watch how the federal government reacts. They've been able to kind of broadly skip over this for now, saying we're waiting to see what this actually is. Eventually, those details will come, and they're going to have to say more than what they've been saying so far. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Given their broad support for vaccine mandates, it would be incongruent for them to come out in any sort of way and oppose this. So it's going to be a hot file federally as well.
Yep. Well, we're going to know more about this when they table that bill in the National Assembly. Rachel Aiello, Susan Delacorte, as usual, lovely to see you guys now that we can't see you in person. Have yourself a wonderful weekend. And that's your Power Play Day in Politics. Thank you for being here with us. We'll be back right here on Monday. Have a safe and happy weekend.